Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Now our guest is Jeff Jadia from NFL Network and NFL.com. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I was just telling Nate how powerful that story was. I was driving in, like, speeding like crazy, trying to get here, weaving in and out of traffic, just kind of, like, trying to control my emotions. So
luckily, Nate's telling a long story. I got some extra time.
I was like, Nate's talking. I'm good.
Yeah.
Right. I show up at 9:20.
Stop and get a coffee. Yeah.
Hey, I made pancakes during one of his questions earlier. So it was fantastic. The kids love it.
Handmade pancakes, too.
Right. From scratch.
I left and went and got the ingredients at the store, came back.
Needed some maple syrup, went and tapped a maple tree.
Smashed up some bananas, yeah. You know.
Took a nap, got up, worked out. It's great.
I'm here to help everybody.
Mike DeCourcy still wants to know which answer he wants the question. Yeah.
Right. Three questions at one time, so Mike DeCourcy.
Which question do you want me to answer, Nate? Yeah. Come on, Nate.
Mm-hmm. Come on,
that.
Nate.
Well, we haven't heard that. Come on, Nate. Come on. A couple of notes real quick to pass along. Adam Schefter has tweeted out that the Washington insert name here has announced that no fans will be at home games in 2020. So Washington has already announced there will be no fans at home games in 2020. And Brett McMurphy has just tweeted out within the last half hour, the Big 12 will have a 11 o'clock Central news conference where Commissioner Bob Boolsby will talk you to sleep. Bob Boolsby will provide an update on the 2020 fall sports season. So Bob Boolsby will have the microphone, will have the spotlight at 11 o'clock. So be ready for some double B on your radio at 11 a.m. Now, Jeff, you played college football,
yeah,
and so you could offer us this perspective. So, if you were right now in one of these conferences that's still up in the air, and you don't know if you're going to play football or not, and you're trying to figure out, well, hey, the Pac-12 and Big Ten is postponed because they don't think it's safe. Is it safe for us? You got all these questions. Would it make you feel better if somebody pulled you aside and said, look, here's the deal. Lou Holtz said it's okay to play college football this year because when they stormed Normandy, they knew there'd be casualties. Would that put aside your fears?
That would settle my concerns.
Okay, good.
I don't think so. I don't think that would do it for me.
No, that wouldn't convince you?
No. But as I think about this, though, as I thought about this over the last 24 hours, I've had a lot of different emotions come into play here, talking to friends of mine who have played college football. And the first thing that bothers me about the whole thing is that it just speaks to just how screwed up college football is in general, how there's just no real leadership. There's no unified leadership. You know, we saw this, whatever it was, a few years ago when the Big 12 broke up and everybody was running to different conferences. As much crap as the NCAA takes, the real problem with college football is college presidents, athletic directors, and college football coaches, because they just want what they want when they want it. It drives me crazy.
Sounds like America.
Yeah, it sounds like America. But it drives me crazy to hear Dabo Swinney and Ed Orgeron and Jim Harbaugh, all these coach Ryan Day, talking about, we just want to play football, we've done all this stuff. It's like as if you're the first people to be inconvenienced by this. Like, no one else in the world has gone through what you're going through right now. It's just welcome to the club. This is what's happening in the world. And so you're living in this bubble where you think you can control everything. You're used to being the kings of the castle, having everything catered to you and everything revolve around you because you drive everything economically and from a popularity standpoint, people love your game. But at the end of the day, that's what this virus is doing to everybody. It's making them realize how little control you have over stuff. And so when I hear Ed Orgeron talking about, I want to have 50,000 fans in the stadium, it makes my head want to explode. It just baffles me that every football coach who's talking about this should be talking first. Hey, we want our players to be safe. Don't tell me about you want to play football. Don't tell me about how all the things you put into place and how COVID's going to be here whether we play or not. Like what Scott Frost is talking about, barnstorming the country, trying to find teams to play. If you're talking about that kind of stuff, then all you're doing is telling me what everybody's been saying already. You don't really care about the players. You care about your programs, you care about your money, you care about your trophies. And at that point, you're making the case for paying players anyway. And I've been one of those people who hasn't been a big fan of the idea of paying players. But you start talking about this kind of stuff, and to get back to the question Steven asked about, if I was on a team that was talking about playing and I'm seeing other conferences saying we're not playing, then I want more assurances about what I'm doing, about what you're doing to make things right for me if something goes wrong. You know, because we don't know how this affects people going forward. We don't know. Trevor Lawrence said about, well, if people are here, they're safer. We don't know that. You know, in the day, it's like college students, once they get done with practice and playing football games, they're going to go out and they're going to party. They're going to chase girls. They're going to do all kinds of stuff. It's going to put them at risk. So to me, it's we said this weeks ago, college football was always in a very dangerous place as far as playing. Now you're seeing two major conferences say, all right, we just can't do this.
You're the first person I've heard say the way you said, that's why, man, it's good having you on the show, because you always say something that it hasn't been recycled 500 times by other people. When you said, as if they're the first people to be inconvenienced by this, that really hit me, because I was just, last segment I was talking about
Lou Holtz said something that has been recycled. That was pretty unique what Lou Holtz said.
That was unique. That certainly was unique.
That at all. Yeah. You just want to ignore the elephant in the room here, but that's fine.
I really don't want to compare playing college football to storming the beaches of Normandy. I'm going to go ahead and leave that to Lou Holtz.
I'm not Lou Holtz.
But I was thinking, like, as soon as you said that, I that last segment talked about how we had to cancel the Big Steps race this year, because what happens a lot of times when we have these conversations, if you bring up concerns you have, or I think this is going to be difficult to pull off, or they might have to think about canceling this or that, immediately someone will accuse you of, you don't want this to happen. You know, like we're talking a lot these days about whether or not our kids are going to go to in-person school or stay at home, a decision I never thought I'd have to make in my life. And people immediately say, well, I want my kids to go to school. Well, yeah, I do too. That wasn't the question. I want Big Steps to happen. This is something I put my heart and soul into for the last 9 years. We just decided we can't do it. You know, there's a that's different, right, than saying you don't want to do it. I just wanted to say that, because when you said that, like, you're the first people to be inconvenienced by this. This is everyone.
Yeah, yeah. And it takes this for you to feel like, oh my God, this is serious now. We might lose college football. Like 160,000 deaths don't do it for you, or 500,000 deaths around the world don't do it for you. Now you know people being hospitalized for months on end. You know, it's. And I don't want to get on a big political soapbox here. I mean, we'll keep this to sports, but It just blew my mind that was the first thing out of so many coaches' mouths. Were like, it wasn't like, well, we're doing what's best for the kids. It's like, why can't we play? Like, for Scott Frost to be sitting there talking about going around the country playing whatever, Rockhurst University and San Pauli Obispo to have a season, it makes no sense. Like, fall in line with what your conference is saying, because what they're saying is we want to make sure our players are safe. Nobody wants to do this. You're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars that all these schools are going to lose. But I think we have to get down to talking about what's really going on player. And it's money. It's money and it's liability. That's what is driving the need for the conferences who are talking about playing to keep playing. That's what's driving the need for the conferences who are going to sit it out. And oftentimes when we talk about this stuff, we don't talk about the nitty-gritty. Like, if you're Eastern Michigan, the cost of testing students alone, student-athlete, is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about thousands of dollars per test for schools that aren't generating the kind of money that Texas is generating. How are you going to do that, not having fans in the stands, not having a big fat TV contract to supplement what you're doing? It's lunacy. And so I give credit to the Big Ten for not only what they just did, but they were the first conference to have an AD come out, Barry Alvarez came out and said, look, we're going to lose $100 million if we don't play football. That's the real conversation here. The other part, they had a kid at Indiana, had a heart problem. Now there's all this discussion about how does COVID affect the heart and what kind of conditions can you get from that. And I know there's back and forth about what's going on here. End of the day, you don't know how this affects you. And if you're playing football in this climate, I think as a student athlete, I want to know, hey, what kind of support am I going to have when I'm done playing here? If this is something that carries forward when I'm 40. If I'm dealing with this when I'm 40 years old, there's some condition results from this. Now, people may say, oh, you're getting way out of control with this, or you're an alarmist. End of the day, tell me who can tell me that can't happen. Because as long as it can happen, then you have to be thinking about what the Pac-12 did, what the Big Ten did.
Do you think the Big 12, SEC, and ACC will play football in the fall?
I think it would be very difficult. I think they will try. I think that if you look at where those a lot of those schools and those conferences are situated, that part of the country has, for the last 5 or 6 months, taken a completely different path or at least approach to dealing with this. They've been a lot less willing to address the seriousness of it.
By the way, I just saw somebody tweeted out the cases per 1,000 in the ACC and SEC region are way higher than the cases per 1,000 in the Big Ten and Pac-12 regions.
Yeah, and so you look at where the Big Ten is situated, where the Pac-12 is situated, those areas of the country have been a lot more strict about dealing with this and a lot more forward-thinking. Florida, Texas, Georgia, you name it. You know, the Big 12's got 6 schools in Oklahoma and Texas alone. And those those states have been a lot less, I don't want to say they haven't taken it seriously, but they haven't taken it as seriously as other parts of the country have. And so, no, I'm not surprised by this because I always felt like the SEC, the Big 12, and the ACC would be the last schools, the last conferences to get on board with this just because of the political climate in those countries. Now, hopefully, we don't get into a situation where this gets worse and they go forward and they're playing, kids are getting sick. I don't know. But I do know this. I don't know how you have a season now when 2/5 of the Power Five aren't playing. I don't know how you have a national championship. I don't know how you get this all together, which brings me back to my initial point, which is there's no leadership. Everybody's doing what they want to do. And so if it's going to be like that, if the SEC wants to play football and say, hey, we did it, but we've had X number of kids get COVID, I don't even know if they're going to report how many kids are going to get COVID. There's no protocols in place for them to do that now. So I don't know what to expect. All I know is that I'm glad the conference that I'm involved with said we're not playing.
Do you think there's a chance, a real chance, that that Nebraska will leave the Big Ten over this?
No, because they're making too much money. I mean, it's, look, they're football crazy up there. I get it. It's religion. It's their NFL. You know, it's, I'm sad that they can't have a season, that all these schools can't have a season, or what I shouldn't say, they'll be playing in the spring. They're going to try to play in the spring.
Do you think that that's because I heard Reese Davis
said no way.
Reese Davis last night, I heard him on ESPN, said he thought it was ludicrous to say you could play in the spring and then turn around and play again in the fall next year.
Well, that's a whole different conversation. I don't know how they're going to make that part work, but I think it's an option. Look, in college football, you can do whatever you want to do. They'll come in and say, hey, we're playing football. They'll be playing football. If they want to do it, they can make it happen. Now, on the back end, into the next season, hey, the NBA's dealing with that right now. Hockey's dealing with that. Baseball's going to be dealing with that. Every sport that's playing right now has to figure out a way to make it work going forward. But that's the place we're in right now. You know, I think what matters is that I just lost my train of thought here, but in terms of playing the season in the spring, it's an option. In terms of what Nebraska's doing as far as leaving, look, they make a lot of money by being in the Big Ten. They make a lot of money. We had an argument months ago about the Big Ten Network. That gives them a lot of money. They've got a pretty good business model for making sure everybody in the Big Ten gets taken care of, which is also probably why they feel like they can make this move, because they feel like they've got a little more financial footing to fall back upon. So, no, I don't think Nebraska's going anywhere. It'd be crazy to.
I have a question from the text line for Jeff. The text line wants to know, with 77 teams that could be active and 84 spots in bowl games, do you think Nebraska realizes that they can actually get back to a bowl game? I don't agree with that.
Okay. Hey, does that mean Kansas has a chance at a bowl game?
Maybe.
Well, I don't know. Let's see.
Well, you're a better person to ask. You're Big 12 guys. Well, how do you feel about the Big 12 playing?
I think the Big 12 is filling their role perfectly by not making any decisions and waiting for someone else to tell them what to do.
did you think anything else was going to happen?
But I do think this is incredible irony, though. The idea that somehow all of a sudden now there's this idea that Nebraska might want to asked to join the Big 12, and that the ACC and SEC are apparently, by all the reports we saw last night, depending on, they're waiting on the Big 12 to keep them going, which, you know.
Well, they're screwed then.
Yeah, exactly. First of all, if anybody's waiting for the Big 12 to make a decision on anything, then you're in a bad spot. But it just makes me laugh because when Conference Armageddon hit, it was just helpless old Big 12 here waiting for everyone to decide if they were going to pick all the good teams apart and leave the rest of us to drown. And now it's like, hey, come on, Big 12, we need you to play. We need you to play so we can get this thing going.
Yeah. It's a whole different situation when you're talking about professional sports, right? You're talking about guys who get paychecks, is what they do for a living. They've got a ton of money, do the testing, the protocols, but all kinds of the stuff that's happening at Arrowhead Stadium is way different than what's happening at KU.
Well, also,
But go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's also, they had a unified system where they said, if you want to opt out as a player, we'll give you $150,000 cash advance and you can sit this one out. Yeah. You know, you had a kind of a general choice to make. And I know all these coaches in college football said, well, our kids can do whatever they want. Do you think that's...
Are you kidding me?
Right. Thank you. You played college football. Yeah. I didn't. That was my response.
Tell me there's no repercussions for a kid saying, I'm not going to play this season?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. I have a problem even with, I think ESPN ran a story a few months ago, so I'm sure the numbers may have changed by now, by a lot of these coaches at public schools where people are being furloughed, people are taking pay cuts, still drawing a full salary. It's crazy to think Nick Saban is still getting paid $9 million a year, and I'm just hypothetically throwing him out there. I think his name was on the list before of not giving money back, but they should be giving money back. They should be helping. They shouldn't be sitting here saying, well, I'm getting my paycheck. My team's going to be all right. We're going to figure out how to make it work for football when every other sport is either firing people or going through the same stuff. When they canceled March Madness, that's when it should have hit everybody. Like, okay, well, this is serious. And, oh, by the way, what were these ADs and college presidents doing for the last 6 months besides sitting in a room talking about how they can still make money instead of putting a plan together and working? I'm sure the Big Ten cut and ran like the Pac-12 did because they realized we're going to get pulled into something that's not going to be good for us. These people in the ACC, SEC, they care about just playing, obviously.
What do you say, though, to the argument that most of these players want to play?
You're talking about 19, 20, 21-year-old kids. I'm sure every kid out there right now wants to play. I was just watching a video on Good Morning America before I came over here about some kids in New York City who commandeered a bus and threw a party on it, smoking pot, playing music, dancing, because they wanted to have a good time. I mean, that's what kids want to do. I don't blame them for that. That's why we have adults in the room. You know, that's why we have adults to make these kind of decisions.
Theoretically.
You know, if we let 21-year-old kids run the world, we're going to have a whole bunch more problems than we already have. So I don't have any problem with them feeling that way. I think, you know, when Trevor Lawrence is talking, he made some good points in what he said in terms of kids coming from disadvantaged neighborhoods and being able to be in a place where they can get tested and not, you know, being exposed to stuff or doing whatever they want to do. But, you know, the other part of that conversation is, okay, what happens when football season is over? You know, what are you going to be doing then? They're going to be testing you the same way, contact tracing, wearing a mask. So it's just about what you want to do for 4 months. You know, I mean, I've seen enough videos of Lake of the Ozark parties and parties in New York and parties in Miami and everywhere else to know that ain't no way a 19, 20-year-old kid is going to go to a college campus, play a major sport, and just sit in his room playing Xbox for the next 6 days until he's got to go to practice or go play a game again. They're going to be out, they're going to be having a good time, and they're going to be just as exposed as everybody else.
Tell you, Jeff, thank you for alerting me to that Good Morning America report about
did you see that
party smoking pot on the bus. That explains why Jake asked me if I knew anyone that owned a bus yesterday.
Yeah, it took over a bus.
I don't know.
It was like Speed.
Right.
Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock, they literally took over a bus and threw a party for 30 minutes.
Right. And
smoking a hookah.
They had a hookah on that thing?
Yeah. High. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Hey, look.
Listener just woke up.
Hey, what?
That hookah on that thing?
Hookah?
Now I'm in.
Hello?
That's right.
What bus is this? Right.
Look like Dwayne Bowe's den.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That guy.
And on that note, we'll break. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com is our guest. Jeff, did you watch any of the first episode of Hard Knocks last night?
Oh, it was on last night? That'd be a no.
That's the same comment that Jake made.
That's exactly what I said. I was like, damn, I missed it? Okay.
What were they showing?
Well, the first 20 minutes or so.
COVID testing.
Really? No, yeah. Yes. It was going through all, and you know, there's a lot of people that haven't seen that, and just what they have to do. And it was, I mean, I was interested by it, but I was also irritated by it because the swab test that they were having done was not the test that I had done, where I felt like they were swabbing my brain through my nostril. And so that.
What were they doing?
I was like, why couldn't I? It was like kind of like just swirling it around in their nose. Like, why couldn't I get that one?
That's what my wife's, she gets tested every week now because of her job as a healthcare professional. And it was, the first one was the brain tickler. And then the second, now they actually are self-administered and it's just a swab in the nose. So,
not to be confused with the French tickler.
That's different.
Right.
Absolutely different.
But, no, actually somebody told me that they said you should have the French tickler. And I said, what's that? And then Jake
hung
up.
It's a different kind of test.
I don't know what that is. Right, exactly. Yeah. I almost fell for it, too, because Jake said, hey, we got it out in the parking lot at Union Broadcast.
Yeah, this gum tastes like rubber.
What the hell does that mean? Right. Yeah. I'm not falling for that one. I'm not falling the old banana in the tailpipe trick again. right off the bat, Anthony Lynn was there at his desk, and I thought it was kind of funny because they had his entire team on Zoom. And he made the mistake and said, okay, if you have any questions, you ask them now and I'll try to answer them for you. And it just kind of went through it spliced together all the different questions the players were asking. Like Anthony was like, you know what, I'll get the answers for you. It gave an example of how many different, because there are a million questions you would ask if you're a player. But the one, I guess, newsworthy part of it is during that Zoom call that they showed to begin the show, that he told his team that he'd tested positive for COVID-19, and that
I did hear that part.
Yeah. Okay, and so that was, I guess that was somewhat interesting. But it went. I mean, I lasted like a half an hour, and then there were other things happening with college football. So I'll go back and watch the second half. But that's what they were doing. They were going back and forth. Basically, the first half an hour was kind of introducing you to Anthony Lynn and Sean McVay, who I mean, and Sean McVay, I mean his house. And just his life, he looks
fat and happy.
It's all right. Oh, yeah. I mean,
so let me ask you this. So it's half Chargers, half Rams?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's Hard Knocks LA.
And the Rams did it like 3 years ago when Goff was a rookie, and it was like the worst Hard Knocks ever.
Yeah, it was with Jeff Fisher, right?
Jeff Fisher.
Oh, yeah. It was brutal.
It was unwatchable.
Oh, and when he cut Nick Foles on the phone. Yeah. I mean, there were so many uncomfortable moments.
And the special teams coach was the guy. Like, they had Hard Knocks with no stars. Like, Gurley wasn't involved. Aaron Donald wasn't involved. Like, all the star players
were nowhere to be found. I mean, the control by that coaching staff, you can tell.
Yeah.
And they didn't last very long. Okay.
Maybe I'll start watching. So, once again, you've shown me some programming I should know about because I actually work for the company that's producing the program.
That's all right.
Like, top 100.
I watch it because Ray Donovan is the narrator, so that makes me happy.
Liev
Schreiber is fantastic. Mm-hmm. He's the best voiceover talent in the business.
Might be my favorite voice.
Yeah, he's just fantastic. And sure. So, okay, let's move on from that then, since I was the only one that was dumb enough to watch that for half an hour.
Watching it today.
I don't believe you.
There was just too much going on last night.
And I'm going to talk Chiefs for a little bit here. We had an interesting question that was posed yesterday. We're talking about Sammy Watkins and, of course, his wild interview with Bleacher Report in the offseason, where one of the proclamations was it would be World War III if he didn't get 100 targets. He's walked back from that, and of course he took the pay cut, stayed in Kansas City, said Kansas City's a happy place, it's all good.
Yeah.
But I ask you, who do you think will have a bigger year? And you could go it in fantasy terms with, you know, catches, yards, touchdowns. Sammy Watkins or Mecole Hardman? My point is, will he fall behind? He's going to be behind Tyreek Hill, and he's going to be behind Travis Kelce as far as the hierarchy there. Could he slip past Mecole Hardman? Do you expect him to take a big jump forward in his second year? Because I think it's going to be interesting to watch those two and who ends up being the guy that gets more production.
Yeah, I could see Mecole Hardman having a bigger year just because there's no secret that Sammy Watkins has been overpaid, not just here, but his entire career. I mean, he's never had he's had 1,000-yard season, one season with more than 65 catches when he's been the main guy in other franchises. So what does he have, like 50 catches last year, and he had 40 the year before? Something like that.
I looked. He had 90 targets. I think 52 catches out of 90 targets, which is not a great percentage, by the way.
And Hardman was almost at like 35, 40 passes, receptions anyway. So I could easily see, I could see Hardman growing more, understanding the offense better, with his speed. Now Sammy Watkins isn't slow, but I could see them doing more stuff to get him involved as far as carrying the football. You know, slip screens, things like that. I certainly think that I could see Hardman having a bigger year, and he's going to be around here longer than Sammy Watkins is going to be. So, I'll take Hardman in that one.
And that was kind of weird, too, because, you know, like he said, if I don't get 100 targets, that's only like 10 more targets than he already had. He had 90 targets. But like Nate said, 90 targets, 52 catches, 673 yards, and 3 touchdowns. While Mecole Hardman had less than half the targets, 41 targets, but he had 26 catches for 538 yards and 6 touchdowns. Yeah. He averaged over 20 yards a catch.
Yeah.
Half the targets, he had more touchdowns. He damn near eclipsed the production from Sammy Watkins last year. I just think because, you know, Sammy's so adamant that he wants to be a bigger part of the offense, but he's not only going to be fighting, you know, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of the backfield. I mean, Mecole Hardman right there was almost more productive than him last year. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch how that develops this season.
Yeah. I think that those are all valid points. And just, you know, they have so many packages and they rotate so many receivers. It's just, it's hard to see Sammy Watkins getting that many targets again. Two, there's always the issue of whether he's going to stay healthy for an entire year. And I would even factor in, you know, I'm looking at, you know, special team production too, because Hardman is a returner. Could have a big impact on this team as well, because he was a Pro Bowl punt returner or kick returner last year, right? I like the upside more with Mecole Hardman, and look, I think most people were surprised that Sammy was still here. You know, if you had said in January he was going to still be around, that would have been probably 90% no. So yeah, I think that Bleacher Report interview was probably just more him just trying to make some headlines and be splashy and, you know, trying to take advantage of his 15 minutes of fame, but that's about as far as I see. I think he'll be about a 45 catch guy, 650, 700 yards again, and I think Hardman could be probably eclipse that.
So we've also talked about the production we're expecting from Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Is it Helaire or Helaire?
I think it's Helaire.
He said Eclair.
Like, yeah, like it rhymes with eclair.
Oh, that's being delicious right now. Wonderful.
I saw that somewhere. Ali Trosta tweeted out something about like a Chiefs menu, you know, like at a restaurant, and there was a bunch of play on words, and that's why I said they got to have a Clyde Edwards eclair. That's got to be one of the items on the menu. But our buddy Lewis Riddick tweeted out last week that he thinks that Clyde Edwards-Helaire should be your number one overall fantasy pick.
I haven't played fantasy football in 3 years, but I do remember one important thing. Like, you have to have a lot of production and a lot of touchdowns to really be the number one guy, right? Mm-hmm. I just don't see Clyde Edwards-Helaire being that player. I think he'll be a good player. I think he'll produce, but I don't know if I'm taking a rookie running back on a team that throws the ball 50 times a game to
what if they throw it to the running back like half those times, though?
I don't know. I mean,
those times is a lot. Yeah. But they throw to the running back a lot in Andy Reid's offenses usually.
Yeah, I have to go back and break down the numbers and see exactly where they were when Kareem Hunt was here that first year, those first 11 games, and how many catches he had and how many yards. I mean, that would be the right comp to look
at. Andy Reid comps him more to Westbrook.
Yeah.
In terms of that style of running back, and he caught the ball out of it.
You're on the right page. You're right.
Yeah.
He's not a guy you take first overall.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like the quarterback likes to throw the ball down the field. I just don't see them all of a sudden throwing all these screen passes and check downs. And
he's a first round pick. He's a good pick. Great running back. Yeah. He should be a star.
Yeah.
But he's not the best fantasy football player in the league going right now.
Yeah, and you got to know, Lewis Riddick worked for Andy Reid and knows Brett Beach. And, you know, he's probably like got a little Casey Wolf in him
He's been
now.
On the hype train for a few different Chiefs players.
Christian McCaffrey is the number one pick.
Yeah, number one pick. Yeah, Derrick Henry, guys like that who you know are going to get 30 touches, 35 touches a game. I don't see Clyde Edwards-Helaire getting that. I feel like he's going to be – look, if he's – and granted – I think if you're going to take a rookie running back and pop him into a season like this, a rookie player, a running back is a good player to have because they don't have to do as much to get up to speed. Or a running back or a corner or a pass rusher, someone like that who doesn't need to, you know, if you're taking a quarterback or a center or receiver, like those guys
what
are
going to
have a tougher
transition. What about inside linebacker? Because a lot of people are hoping Willie Gay Jr. is going to make a lot of production. That's a position that takes a lot of reading and reacting, doesn't it?
I think it'll be tough. Yeah, because you're going to face situations that you haven't faced in college. You're going to have a lot more teams trying to match you up and take advantage of mismatches. And, you know, you got to be able to cover and blitz. And there's going to be confusion. He'll probably be playing a second too slow just as he's trying to figure things out. Because again, no practice time, no preseason games to get up to speed. He's gonna tackling and is gonna be a big issue this year for a lot of teams because of the lack of tackling, lack of contact going into the season. But yeah, I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think if he's 700 yards rushing, if he's 50 catches, I think that's a pretty good season for him. That's what I said even back when Damian Williams was still
around.
So
that hasn't changed, even though Damian Williams is out.
Yeah, I just don't see them. I don't see them running the ball to that extent. I just feel like they've got so many weapons in the passing game that they're going to be throwing the ball a lot more.
I mean, you don't see that? That's a bold statement. It's a bold statement from Lewis Riddick, but I mean, I thought it was crazy that Nate said that he thought the number one overall pick in fantasy football should be Josh Stallman. I mean, he doesn't.
Weird. Yeah. But number one overall pick over who was the number one overall pick last year in your fantasy drafts?
I'm trying to remember.
A lot of Ezekiel Elliott
was getting a lot of love.
I believe that Mahomes was in the league that I'm in at 6 points for a touchdown pass. So, you know, Patrick. But
so what do you guys think he's going to do?
Oh, you know I got him having a big year.
What's a big year?
I've said what did I say? What was my prediction, Jake, way back when? I mean, I'm guessing about 1,000 yards was – rushing and another 500 yards receiving, something like that.
So what? 1,000 and what? 500 yards?
500?
Receiver?
Yeah.
1,500 total yards?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty heavy.
How many
heavy.
Touchdowns?
I'm going to say like 5 rushing and 5 receiving. I'm just pulling those out of my
I don't think Jake's with that.
No, like, I mean, realistically, I think.
It's right there. That would not be close to the number one overall pick in the draft, those numbers.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right?
I mean,
I'm not as crazy as Lewis Riddick.
Yeah, you're not.
I'm pretty
I mean, realistically, he's around a top 10 running back. If you're looking at the fantasy rankings right now, I mean, the guys that are ahead of him just off the top of my head would be McCaffrey, Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, Kamara,
Derrick Henry.
And again,
Derrick
if you're talking about a dynasty draft or a dynasty auction, that's a different story.
Oh, he went number one overall in all my dynasty.
Dalvin Cook.
Dalvin Cook. I mean, he went number one overall in all my dynasty drafts. He was the first pick off the board. And that's where, I mean, for rookies, that's where he should be. He's the best rookie fantasy prospect there is. So, I mean, he'll be the first rookie taken.
I don't think if that's the case. I mean, I do think that history indicates that it's not outlandish to say that he could have a more productive year than all those guys you just mentioned, because rookie running backs do that.
Those guys
sometimes.
Had a preseason. Those guys had a preseason games. They had a full workload of practices going into the season.
That's fair. I mean, that is a different. That's an X factor that we don't know how that's going to play out.
X factor. What does he have to do with this?
Well,
what?
You know.
There's no fans. What are you? Oh, man, we're going to break now. Yep. Now Nate's just throwing stuff to the wall to see if it sticks. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Here's another tweet from Brett McMurphy just a few minutes ago. Big 12 schedule notes, sources told Stadium. And that's who Brett McMurphy writes for. Big 12 games begin September 26th, title game December 12th in Arlington. Start of the season can be delayed to October 10th and end December 12th with title game December 19th if necessary. September 26th, Kansas at Baylor, Texas at Texas Tech, West Virginia at OSU, K-State at Oklahoma, Iowa State at TCU, and for now, Oklahoma and Texas still scheduled for October 10th in Dallas.
Desmond Howard was quoted today as saying about the Nebraska situation we talked about. He said, quote, you're a Michigan guy here, Jeff. I would demand a public apology from Nebraska, and if I'm Kevin Warren, I'm working on a way to get their ass out of the Big Ten. They ain't Notre Dame, baby. They don't have the cachet.
There we go. Everybody's heating up now. Let the beast begin.
Yeah, tempers are rising. Temperatures are rising.
Woo. Well, you know what? That's what's going to happen. There'll be a lot more of that coming in the next few months, all the way around. So, but I hear where he's coming from. I mean, I feel like you should be falling in line with your conference because it's a one for all for one mentality. And look, I don't know where Scott Frost is coming from. He seems like a pretty nice guy, pretty good coach. And again, I understand that how football is treated up there, but it just sounds ridiculous to think you're just going to go around trying to find teams to play just to play.
Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com is our guest. Jeff, did you watch, have you been watching any of the NBA as we get closer to the playoffs? And Dame Lillard, 61 points he dropped last night.
He's become the story of the NBA, hasn't he? With his issues with the Clippers and the points he's been putting up for a team that's won, what, 34 games all year?
He will become the story until they lose in heroic defeat, yeah. And he goes out and has amazing games in the playoffs, but still can't, you know, advance.
Maybe. I mean, he might give some teams some worry.
Oh, no, he'll give some teams worry. No, I said heroic defeat. Like, they'll push some team to the brink, and he'll have these amazing games, and then they'll lose. And I mean, I don't say that to belittle him
Lakers,
at all.
I don't think you want anything to do with him.
I feel like when I watch the NBA games, it's like watching, like, a sci-fi movie with the virtual fans, like something called Minority Report or something like that. It's such a weird,
it's great.
The pumped in sound. It's just,
I like the fact that the players can apparently see the fans too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's awesome.
I thought interesting. Like, Billy Donlin, the Kansas City Roos head coach, was on, and we were talking about the quality of play, and all the games have been so exciting. And it's been like, you know, we're obviously locked into this and watching this far more than we normally watch the end of the regular season, at least for me. But he made a great point with the situation. They're sleeping in the same bed every night. There's continuity. Like he said, they're not getting done with a game at 11:30 at night and then hopping on a plane or having to travel and mess with everything else. They're there playing basketball in the bubble, and that's led to a higher quality of play and some tremendous action to watch. At least that's what I've been thrilled with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've said this all along. I think the best sports to have going right now are basketball, hockey, where you can play in a bubble. You can have people committed to being in the bubble. You don't have to worry about all the things you just mentioned, all those different variables. And so it makes for a pretty good product on the court. And I think, be honest with you, we just talked about college football for 20, 30 minutes. I could see college basketball working in a bubble situation. I could see volleyball. I could see, obviously, tennis, swimming, golf, sports where you don't have to be touching anybody, working out. There's sports you can play.
I've talked to some people around college basketball that say that the bubble talk is already severely underway in college basketball.
It's legit. Yeah, I mean, you can do that.
Especially if you're going to be if campuses are going to be shut down after Thanksgiving, that gives you all of December and possibly all of January. The way they're talking about, you know, campuses being shut down, to try to do something that also keeps them in a situation where there's no students around. Yep. There's possibilities there, and they're probably going to have to do that if they want to play college basketball if this virus keeps going the way that it is into the wintertime.
Yeah, it's one of the lowest maintenance sports as far as team sports go. I mean, so you know you can go and you can play games around the clock. These people are already playing tournaments and different islands and all over the country and that whatever around the holidays, so they're used to doing it. You could get in a lot of games pretty quickly and then see where you're at. Even March Madness could be in a bubble situation, be honest with you.
I mean,
so you have things you can do. And again, with football, you just get into the situation of there's just too many bodies, too much time. And
there's the logistics
people,
of it.
And we said in the break, there's too many guys who are going to do things that are stupid just because they're stupid. Not because they're trying to be bad. Not because they're trying to cheat the rules. Just because they do dumb stuff.
Story
you,
of my
you
life.
You talk about guys who have tons of time, used to being catered to all the time, doing what they want to do. They're going to their sense of perspective and maturity is going to be different than the average Joe Blow. So you're going to have a lot more Lou Williams type stuff happening.
I'm gonna use that. I'm going to remember that. Because instead of trying to make sense of things, I'm going to remember people will do stupid stuff because they're stupid. People will tweet stupid things because they're stupid.
Yeah. Makes things a lot easier. Makes things simple.
I'm gonna stop trying to, like, why did they just text that to us? Why did someone just tweet this? Why did they tweet something so stupid? Well, I got to remind myself, because some people are stupid.
You're just dumb.
I'm also going to use that as a defense when my wife yells at me for doing something stupid. Honey, it's not because I'm a bad person. I'm just stupid.
That defense has already been utilized and taken out of my hands. That's just a known fact around this house. So, Jeff, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Next week, we'll talk about football type stuff. Yeah, like on the field football stuff.
Look at this optimism.
We're going to be on the field. Stuff.
Who is?
Things will be happening.
Everyone next week, watch Hard Knocks. We at least
there
talk
we go.
About that.
All right.
Make one of those teams. That sounds good.
Yeah.
That's Jeff Chedia. Everyone have a great day listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.